If it bleeds, we can kill it. She discovered the key. There is proof we can wound it. So repeat after me. If it bleeds, we can kill it.
If it bleeds, we can kill it.
Yeah, now take a stand.
Here now, take a stand.
We can bring down this bastard.
We can bring down this bastard.
If we stick to the plan. If it bleeds, we can kill it.
Hello and welcome to the podcast that ain't got time to bleed. It's Film Bookcast, the official podcast of filmbook.com. My name is Mike Smith. Joining me, as always, is one ugly motherfucker.
Mike DiCriscio.
How you doing today, Mike?
I'm a little hurt, honestly. I thought this was going to be like a nice reunion. Instead, you just insult me right to my face.
Yeah, well, I feel like you should have expected that. This is Film Bookcast, Mike.
Right.
Speaking of reunion, we are back. It has been a while, man. It's been a while.
It has been a long, long time.
It has been. Just about 2 months since our last episode of Film Bookcast. A lot of things have happened in that time. We announced then we were going to take a hiatus, and we did. We stuck true to our word. And we also said that we will be back for a review of The Predator, and we stuck to that as well. So that's
pretty cool. As far as us setting a goal for reviewing a movie and then doing it, like, watch out, podcast world. We're coming.
What have you been up to over the last 2 months, Mike?
It hasn't been a whole lot. It was pretty slow for me. I've been watching lots of movies, hanging out, doing work. But what about you?
Yeah, I moved to Montana, so, like, slightly more stuff than you've been doing.
Yeah. That's more than not doing anything.
Exactly. So. Yeah. I moved to Montana, got that new job. So it's been going good. Got a new apartment, got mostly furnished. Still working on that. But, mostly for the most part, like, I've just been watching movies like usual. Like, it's basically all I do.
You're just doing the same exact thing in a different state.
Exactly. So that's fun. But we had to keep the podcast going, Mike. There was no way we had to stop the podcast. Like that time difference won't stop us. And if you've never listened to Film Bookcast before, first we start with some film news, and then we move on into some discussions where Mike and I each discuss whatever piece of media we have been consuming lately. After that, we move on into our feature review. This week, we are discussing the latest film from director Shane Black and the fourth film in the Predator series, not counting the ones where they fight xenomorphs, The Predator. So you were excited for The Predator, Mike. I mean, you're a Shane Black fan, you're a Predator fan, right?
Yeah. I'm a big Shane Black fan. I haven't seen all of his work, but I've seen a bunch of it, partly thanks to you.
Yeah.
And I am a Predator fan. I have only seen the first one, honestly.
Oh, really?
Not counting the AVP movies. Culturally, I'm aware of them, and I'm a big fan of them. Actually, that's a lie. I missed only the second one. I forgot about the Adrian Brody one.
So you saw Predators, is what you're saying?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, yeah, cool. Yeah, I'm also a huge Shane Black fan. I have seen all of his movies, and I'm a fan of the Predator series. I've also seen all of those. I actually rewatched all the Predator movies before this podcast, just to prepare, before I got to see the Predator, just in case there's any, deep cut references to certain Predator movies. And there are a couple of those in the Predator, but we're going to get to that when we actually get to our review. Right now, it's good to be back, Mike. Let's get into some film news.
Hi! It's time for...
What?
All right, it's time for film news here on Film Bookcast. Now, Mike, we have been gone for 2 months. A lot of film news has happened in that time. We're not going to be covering most of it because that's a lot to cover.
Yeah, we don't have time for a four-hour episode.
Yeah. We can do Film Bookcast after dark if you wish, but I don't think you wish, so. But I did want to talk about one thing that happened over the course of the last 2 months, and I thought this was pretty funny. So the Oscars, in an effort to remain relevant, decided to add a new category called Best Popular Movie to the proceedings. And what was funny about this is that they introduced this category probably like a week after we finished recording our last episode, something like that. Like, it was really shortly after that. And the backlash was immediate. Everybody thought this was a stupid idea. It was basically just an excuse to give an award to Black Panther because they don't think it'll be nominated for Best Picture. And that kind of thing. The reaction on Twitter was very inflammatory. And then just a few weeks ago, the Oscars announced that they are taking back that category, or they're reworking it for this, so it won't be in the 2019 Oscars. They're not ruling out that it won't be in future Oscars, but it won't be. It's not going to happen. So I just thought it was funny that in the time that we've been off, the Oscars have added and taken away that category before we even came back. That was pretty funny.
So you're welcome, Oscars fans, I guess.
Yeah, that's on us.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, so moving on from that, I did want to talk about something really cool, and this actually happened a couple weeks ago, too, but this is so up our alley, I feel like we should mention it in film news, and when this news broke, I texted you immediately, because I knew you were the first person that needed to know about this. Director Rian Johnson, who we love, he directed Brick, he directed Star Wars The Last Jedi, Looper, Brothers Bloom, he's got a new movie coming out, a new murder mystery called Knives Out. It's going to star Daniel Craig, and he's going to film it before he returns to the Star Wars universe.
Oh, man. What a fucking just... of a sentence. That was a chef's kiss for everyone at home.
Yes, I texted you that sentence, and then you texted back, oh, fucking sexed. which is accurate. Yeah, so Rian Johnson, I mean, hasn't really done a murder mystery in a while. Like, Brick, really, is the last murder mystery he did. And Brick is amazing. So, like, I'm real psyched to see him jump on this. And I love that he's doing something else before he jumps back into Star Wars, too. That was my fear. Like, as much as I love The Last Jedi, and as much as I'm very excited to see what his vision for Star Wars is going forward, I was hopeful that he would do the kind of Christopher Nolan thing, where he would make a Batman movie, and then do his own thing, and then a Batman movie, and then his own thing. So if Rian Johnson can, like, pull that off, where it's like a one for them, one for me kind of scenario, I think we're in for some really amazing movies over the next few years.
Yeah, that would be incredible. Because the biggest fear is he goes to make Star Wars, and then we only get Rian Johnson Star Wars movies for 10 years.
Yeah, and, like, they'll probably be awesome.
However long. Yeah, that would be incredible, but I want other things. I want Rian Johnson to just do everything.
Exactly.
It should not, like, Hollywood, like, it's really Rian Johnson-wood. That's what I want. Also, phrasing, I guess. I've made a huge mistake.
Yeah, fair enough.
You're welcome.
Yeah, so very excited about that upcoming movie, and I think it's probably going to happen pretty soon. I mean, my guess is probably that it would film, like, sometime next year and be out hopefully by 2020. I mean, because I think the reason this is happening, this is moving forward now, is because Daniel Craig, there's, like, a lull in James Bond filming because Danny Boyle left the upcoming James Bond movie. So now they don't have a director. So Daniel Craig's like, well, might as well get this out, like, make this happen.
And I think they brought back different writers, too, right?
Yeah, they're not using Danny Boyle's script for the James Bond movie. Yeah, so basically it's back to the drawing board for James Bond 25. So Daniel Craig is like, well, while I'm waiting on that, might as well get this out of the way, too. So pretty excited about that. And then we got to move on into some other news. And this happened a couple days ago, and it's incredibly questionable. Mike, you're a fan of... or I remember a while back, you talked about Red Sonja as a discussion on this podcast. Or you had like a list of 80s movies that you were going through, and I feel like you abandoned that list a while ago.
I did, yeah. But, I still have it, but I came pretty close to finishing it.
Yeah, but you talked about the Conan movies, and then you talked about Red Sonja.
Her courage was forged out of fire. Her power, a gift of the gods. Her destiny, to become a glorious new hero. Red Sonja.
I have not seen the Red Sonja movie, and I'm not really that familiar with the character, but what would you say if they were going to make a new Red Sonja movie?
I would say, like, sure, I guess, in the age of we have nothing else to do, the mindset of big Hollywood studios to be like, we don't know how to make things new anymore, let's just adapt old stuff.
Right.
And from the 80s, and we already made a new Conan movie. So I guess let's do that one. Oh, let's do Red Sonja also.
I forgot about that new Conan movie.
So did I, until right now, actually.
Wow. Now, what would you say if the guy who's making that Red Sonja movie was Bryan Singer?
Nope.
Congratulations, you're part of the internet.
Yeah.
So for those who don't know, Bryan Singer was the director of Usual Suspects, X-Men, Superman Returns, most recently Bohemian Rhapsody, and he was fired midway through production of Bohemian Rhapsody because... there are a lot of sexual assault allegations surrounding Bryan Singer that have dated back for years. And these have been relatively public for a very long time. And on top of that, like, even if you're not concerned about having him direct your movie because of the sexual assault allegations, this dude has just fucking disappeared from set a lot. I mean, that was part of the reason why he was fired from Bohemian Rhapsody, was because he just disappeared. He was clashing with Rami Malek on set and just was gone for weeks at a time. And he did the same thing during X-Men Apocalypse, and he did the same thing during Superman Returns. He just disappeared. And it's like, how, like, even if you can somehow make it past the sexual assault allegations, which you probably shouldn't, like, how do you keep hiring this guy who's clearly unreliable and clearly, like, makes things very difficult to be on set with?
Yeah, I have no, there is no possible justification in 2018 anymore to hire somebody like this.
Yeah.
Besides the, yeah, just, I got nothing. Yeah. There's no reason for him to be working anymore.
It's very, very weird. And he's still the credited director on Bohemian Rhapsody, even though he didn't finish production. But that's very much, like, in the same vein that, like, Zack Snyder is the credited director on Justice League, even though he's not...
right.
Like, it's just a weird directorial credit thing. But I feel like because of the buzz of surrounding that movie, because I've heard that movie's going to be in the talk for, like, Oscar conversations and stuff like that, like, I feel like tangentially, like, since he's attached, since his name is on it, like, people are slightly gravitating towards him, but, like, nah, man, this is bad. This is real bad. And I don't think this movie ends up happening with Bryan Singer. I feel like the reaction has been so strongly against it, that it just won't, it just won't make it past, like, pre-production. But especially because Red Sonja feels like it could be, it could easily be a movie that follows the Wonder Woman model of hiring a great female filmmaker. Especially because I was looking into the character, and it's, I guess, a character who, and I'm not 100% on who Red Sonja is, but, like, she, like, there's some kind of curse on her where she can't have sex with men or something, because she was raped, and because,
yeah.
And so she gets powers and things like that. I realize I butchered that backstory entirely, but, like, that's something that you could have a female filmmaker make through, like, a certain perspective and could be really interesting. But Bryan Singer, not so much.
No.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's very much a, you know, like, pulp fantasy, late 70s, 80s, early 80s character. So it definitely, like, it is that, like, what you, like, the way you said it.
Yeah.
Where, like, she sort of is who she is because of her sexual assault. Which is very weird in modern times. But yeah, let's not have, like,
a dude, a
pedophile guy direct that movie.
A guy accused of sexual assault, make a movie about a character who was sexually assaulted. Yeah, let's maybe not make that happen. Anyway, so that's Bryan Singer making Red Sonja. I don't think it'll come to pass, but that was one of the big stories that happened over the past week. And then I got one last real bit of news before I move on to one other thing. But... The big superhero news that happened, I think this was last week, and I can't say we didn't see this coming, you know? But Henry Cavill, who has been playing Superman in three movies now, Man of Steel, Batman vs. Superman, and Justice League, is no longer playing Superman in the DC universe. And I gotta say, Henry Cavill was never my favorite Superman, but I think that's mostly because he just was never given anything, like, compelling to work with. If he was playing the Superman that he played for the last half hour of Justice League across all three movies, I feel like I would be a lot more, like, bummed about him leaving.
I can't tell you how much I appreciate you doing this.
Not at all, Barry. Curious myself.
Yeah, and it's not like a competition, you know? Well, it is a competition, but, you know, it's not like a macho measuring thing.
But if I win, you're off the team.
Right.
As it is now, it's like, oh, man... I mean, Henry Cavill, a talented actor. He's been great in other stuff. Man from U.N.C.L.E., Mission Impossible. And now that he's leaving Superman, it's like, well, it just seems like a missed opportunity, I guess.
Yeah, I remember hearing... I can't even remember... I don't remember exactly what movie it is, but it's one of the newer movies that they're making. It might have been Wonder Woman 1984, where they, like, wanted him to come make a cameo something.
I think that was Shazam. I think I heard they were trying to...
Oh, you're right, it was Shazam. That makes sense, yeah. And he was like, why? That doesn't make any sense. Like, why would I be in this movie? And then he just, like, peaced. Which, good for him. He deserves better projects.
Right. And you're very excited about another project he's actually been cast as, right, Mike?
Yes. Yeah. Henry Cavill is going to be playing Geralt, the lead character in the Witcher series, the video games and the novels, for Netflix. Netflix is making a show. Henry Cavill's going to be the lead character, and I'm so excited about it. after seeing him in Mission Impossible Fallout, I'm like, yeah, sign me up. Slap a white wig on him and give him two swords. He's going to fuck up some monsters.
Very cool. Be great. Yeah, I'm not super familiar with The Witcher, but I know a lot of people who are really excited about that, so that's pretty cool. I'm really, like, I'm just wondering what this means for the future of the DC universe. If you don't have a Superman, that's a pretty big figurehead to lose.
Yeah.
And, you know, on top of that, like, there's been no official announcements about this, but like Ben Affleck's almost definitely not back as Batman.
No.
So you're losing your two biggest people, and now you've got Wonder Woman. That's a huge success. And Gal Gadot will continue to be Wonder Woman for a while, I'm sure. You got this Aquaman movie coming out in a couple months with Jason Momoa. Shazam is happening, and I think Shazam actually looks kind of delightful. I don't know if you've watched the trailer for that movie yet.
I haven't, no.
Okay, it looks fun. It looks like a solid movie. Aquaman, I don't know. I've seen the trailers for it. I mean, I'm excited for it because it's James Wan, and James Wan is great.
Yeah,
But to me, the trailers make it look like just like Water Thor. Like it's
yeah, that's exactly what
it's Water Thor. It's literally the same. It's like a kingdom and the brother and all that. It's just Thor but with Aquaman. But yeah, you got Shazam coming out. You got this the Wonder Woman 2. You also got this this Joker movie that is actually happening apparently with Joaquin Phoenix. And I mean, there's so many talented people involved in that movie aside from the director Todd Phillips that I'm like maybe this could work. But yeah, there are interesting projects coming up. It's just, I don't know, I feel like without Superman, without Henry Cavill as Superman, like, I feel like they have to reconfigure everything. Like I feel like they might abandon the concept of a full universe for a while and just do standalone movies.
That's the only logical explanation.
Yeah.
And I can't even put together a sentence about this, Mike. Like, look at how bad Justice League was. Like, why? It's like, don't stop. Just give it up.
Yeah.
Your experiment failed, and that's okay.
Yeah.
Learn from it. Make good standalone movies like Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
Like, that was a standalone movie, effectively.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I hope that's what they do. I hope they go off and just, okay, let's make this weird Joker movie. Let's make. Do weird shit and don't try to shoehorn it in to fit this big universe. Just
right.
Go let them be filmmakers, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, Henry Cavill out as Superman, pretty shocking news, but also not shocking at all. And then finally got one last bit of film news here. Not really film news. This is TV news. The Emmys were on last night, so I figured I'd go through some of the winners here. I watched it. Mike, did you watch it? I'm guessing no.
I did not.
Yeah, I didn't think so. It was an okay ceremony. It was hosted by Colin Jost and Michael Che from Saturday Night Live. And I generally like those guys on SNL. I think they're pretty funny on Weekend Update. They're not like my favorite update anchors or anything. But I feel like, you know, when they first started, they were pretty rough. And they've gotten a lot better over time. I thought they were not great as the hosts for the Emmys. They kind of just seemed very uncomfortable. And really a lot of the Emmys kind of felt like that. It opened with this, opening number with Kenan Thompson and Kate McKinnon and, Kristen Bell and Titus Burgess, about how they like solved diversity in TV. And it was like a jokey bit. But it didn't really work. And then on top, like they mentioned at the top that like the nominees for the Emmys this year were the most diverse in Emmys history. And like that was a big thing. They did like a round of applause from themselves. And then like it was almost all white winners and
Jesus Christ.
And I thought that was very like there's no way they can really control that, I guess, but like, you know, it depends on who people vote for, but I just thought that was a very funny thing. But anyway, yeah, so the ceremony was okay. There was some decent moments. The highlight was absolutely this guy Glenn Weiss, who was the director of the Oscars, won an Emmy for directing the Oscars. I don't know if you saw
that's so funny.
But anyway, he won an Emmy for directing the Oscars, and then when he went up there, I don't know if you saw this online or anything, because I feel like this made the rounds a little bit today. He proposed to his girlfriend while he was doing his speech.
I'm really grateful to be here, but it's bittersweet. The person most proud at this moment would be my mom, and she passed away just 2 weeks ago. My part of my heart is broken. I don't think it will ever be repaired, but she's in me, and she always will be. Mom always believed in finding the sunshine in things, and she adored my girlfriend, Jan. Jan, you are the sunshine in my life. And Mom was right. Don't ever let go of your sunshine. You wonder why I don't like to call you my girlfriend? Because I want to call you my wife.
And that was incredible. That was just a great, like, live TV moment. Like, one of those things that's, like, it only kind of... It kind of reminded me of when, like, La La Land lost to Moonlight at the Oscars. Like, it was just one of those big, like, moments where it's like, holy shit, what's happening? And that kind of thing. So the reaction in the room was big, and that was really great to watch. And it's... I feel like it reflects poorly on the Emmy ceremony that was the moment that everybody was talking about.
Yeah, the thing that had really nothing to do with it.
Exactly. And here's the thing. I'm somebody who watches a lot of TV. I watch a lot of television. I watch a lot of different shows. And for the first, like, 2 hours of this ceremony, I had not seen any of the winners. Like,
what?
Like, TV has gotten so splintered now, where it's like, I can't keep up with everything. And it doesn't help that, like, one of the shows swept basically all the comedy awards. The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel on Amazon won almost everything. And the other comedy awards were won by Barry. Barry, I've been meaning to watch for a very long time, just haven't got around to it. And I've heard really good things about Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, but also haven't watched that either. And they won all the comedy awards. Like, legit. And then on top of that, I mean, Twin Peaks got completely snubbed.
Come on.
Well, okay, but Twin Peaks was nominated for 2 awards, which is way less than it should have been nominated for. But it was in the limited series category, and it was nominated for writing and directing. It lost both. And here's the thing. David Lynch was nominated as director for Twin Peaks, right? And that's, like, an easy win. That should have been the win for Twin Peaks right there.
That's the layup.
It lost to Ryan Murphy, who was the director of Assassination of Gianni Versace, American Crime Story. Also the creator of Glee.
Yes.
And I was just like, the fucking creator of Glee beat David Lynch?
I guess they're just, like, jelly that he made a 10-hour movie.
Yeah.
Like, a full-on movie. And they're like, we can't.
Yeah.
Can't award that on our television awards.
Yeah, I mean, that's a bummer. Because Twin Peaks, I mean, I think is easily the most, it's the best. But there's not even words to describe it. It's a damn shame that the Emmys didn't realize that. But yes. I mean, they also didn't reward The Leftovers when it was on and that kind of thing. Like the really great stuff tends to get overlooked. But anyway, also Atlanta completely shut out. No wins there. No Love for the Good Place. Ted Danson was nominated for Best Actor, but he didn't win. So the winners overall, I mean, Marvelous Mrs. Maisel won Outstanding Comedy Series, beating out Atlanta, Barry, Black-ish, Curb Enthusiasm, Glow, Silicon Valley, and Kimmy Schmidt. And of those, I watch 5 of those, I guess, but I haven't seen the new season of Glow. So I do watch a decent amount of the comedy shows. For the drama shows, I watch 3 of them, which were Game of Thrones, Stranger Things, and Westworld. Game of Thrones won, and it beat out Stranger Things from Westworld, The Americans, The Crown, The Handmaid's Tale, and This Is Us. A lot of people were upset about the Game of Thrones win, because a lot of people don't like this most recent season of Game of Thrones. They think it's like too, and I don't understand that at all. This season was fucking awesome. But
I did see a lot of people were upset that The Americans didn't win.
Right, because this was The Americans' last season. And it did win a couple of big awards for the first time. It won writing and it won Best Actor for Matthew Rhys. So, like, that's pretty cool. On top of that, John Oliver won Variety Talk Series, which I think he's won, like, the last 3 years in a row, and he'll win for the next 10 years. That's how it works. Before John Oliver started winning, John Stewart won, like, 10 years in a row.
Nice.
But anyway, yeah, so Outstanding Sketch Series, Saturday Night Live won that, because obviously it did. And that's the problem with the sketch. They introduced that category a couple of years ago. At first, like, I was on board with that, because I was like, oh, yeah, I recognize some sketch shows, because they never get into, like, actual categories. But then I realized, well, SNL is going to enter in that and just win every year, because it's bigger than every sketch show.
Yeah. Is it just SNL nominated 8 times? Like, what other, shows are there?
It was SNL, At Home with Amy Sedaris, Drunk History, I Love You America with Sarah Silverman, Portlandia, and Tracy Ullman's Show on HBO. So I think the first year they did that category, Key and Peele won for its last season, and then every year since, it's been SNL.
That sounds right.
Yeah. But then Outstanding Limited Series went to American Crime Story, Gianni Versace, beating out The Alienist, Genius Picasso, Godless, and Patrick Melrose. And then Reality Competition Program went to RuPaul's Drag Race, which I believe is its first time winning, so that's kind of big. So usually, I think that category usually goes to The Amazing Race. Which was nominated, or maybe not in recent years, but I feel like it won a lot for a really long time. American Ninja Warrior also in there, Project One Way, Top Chef, and The Voice. And then lead actor in a comedy, Bill Hader and Barry. Lead actress, Rachel Brosnahan for Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Lead actor in a drama, Matthew Rhys, The Americans. Lead actress, Claire Foy for The Crown. Lead actor limited series, Darren Criss for American Crime Story. And lead actress, Regina King for 7 Seconds. Not untalented winners or anything. I hadn't seen most of the stuff, and that's a very unusual thing for me when I'm watching one of these shows.
Is it me that's wrong, or is it the kids?
Yeah, is it the children who are wrong? Actually, one winner I was really excited to see. John Mulaney won Outstanding Writing for a Variety Special for his new stand-up special, Kid Gorgeous. And I've seen that special like 3 times already. So I was pretty excited about that, and he had a pretty funny acceptance speech. And he beat out Samantha Bee for The Great American Puerto Rico, It's Complicated, which I guess was a special on TBS, Michelle Wolf special, Patton Oswalt special, and Steve Martin and Martin Short special. Pretty cool. Black Mirror won for outstanding writing for the USS Callister episode, which I've heard was very good. But yeah, it's all I'm looking through them now, and it's like all Mrs. Maisel and American Crime Story.
Like, what you would expect.
Yeah, pretty much. The Emmys, they were all right. I don't know. I feel like this ceremony was kind of lackluster compared to some other years. But, you know, I mean, that's how it goes. It's these award shows, so that's kind of how it always is, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, I think that about wraps up our film news, Mike. Let's move on into our discussions. These are my discussions. Just when I thought I said all I could say, my buddy and I talk about movies we see. These are my discussions. There is so much to see, you and me. So we're going to talk about movies for our discussions. All right, it's time for our discussions here in Film Bookcast. Mike, what do you have to discuss with us today?
So today, I have a few things I want to mention real quick, and then I have a few other things that I want to actually talk about.
Yeah.
Since it's been 2 months, and you texted me with a very valid concern, was, please tell me you have watched things. Which, to be fair, I don't have a great history of doing.
Right.
So real quick, I want to mention Enemy of the State, which is like a 1999 Will Smith, Gene Hackman movie.
Sure.
Hadn't seen it since probably 2000 or 2001, and yo, this movie's amazing. It holds up real well.
Yeah, I saw that in high school. My technology class watched it as part of like a lesson on technology. But it was fucking dope then.
it sort of feels like a Michael Bay movie. I don't think it is.
It's a Tony Scott. Tony Scott made that movie.
Oh, okay. That makes a lot of sense, yeah. Actually. And it's pretty wild just like how much of the... like the NSA and government are watching and listening to all of us all the time thing they got right.
Yeah.
Like 10 years before that actually all came out. so that's wild.
Yeah.
Another movie I want to mention is called Arsenic and Old Lace.
That's a great movie.
And this is a Cary Grant comedy that came out in, I think, 1944?
Yes.
Something like that. And it is just a straight-up farce where Cary Grant discovers a body in his spinster aunt's living room. And it's just shenanigans ensue after that. That's available on Filmstruck, which is where I watched it. And the other day I had a Cary Grant little marathon, and I watched North by Northwest also.
Nice.
On Filmstruck, which is another movie I hadn't seen in a while, just in you know, my Hitchcock catalog I hadn't seen or seen in a while. And I think it's his best movie, or my favorite movie by Hitchcock.
Really?
I think it beats it. It has a... unseated vertigo for me.
Okay.
Which was number one, I think, sort of just because, like, it's supposed to be.
right.
And then I had seen Vertigo in theater, actually, in Albany, in that old, the Madison Theater, I think.
Oh,
it was.
Yeah,
they used
yeah.
to do, like, second run, or, you know, they renovated it and started doing old movies.
Mm-hmm.
And it was awesome. It's great. But it felt, like, a little too slow for what I remembered it, which I guess is,
yeah.
like, the point. And then I rewatched North by Northwest, and I didn't remember how, like, exciting all of it is.
Oh, yeah, that the movie.
Cary Grant's hilarious, and yeah. that movie's, like, on it. It's got a mission, and it's on it,
yeah.
and it's awesome.
That movie's a fucking banger, right
yeah.
there. But, yeah, I would also put it above Vertigo. I don't know, I like Vertigo a lot, but it's never been, like, a top-tier Hitchcock for me. And I know it is kind of considered, like, I think Sight and Sound called it the number one movie of all time. And
yeah,
stuff like
I think
that.
The AFI does too. Or
yeah, well, I mean, the AFI was Citizen Kane, I think, but
oh, you're right.
But it's always like one of those two.
Yeah,
but like for me, my favorite Hitchcock is probably Dial In for Murder, which I don't know if you've seen, but that movie is pretty amazing. And that was he came out with that the same year he came out with Rear Window, which is another one. It's like another like top three Hitchcock
yeah.
movie for me.
That's pretty. I think I've seen it, but I'll have to see if it's on Filmstruck. Maybe I'll watch it again.
Yeah,
because why not? That's what it's for. And then the other things that I actually want to talk about, Beyond the Black Rainbow.
Hello. My name is Dr. Mercurio Arborea, and I am the founder of the Arborea Institute. Through our unique blend of benign pharmacology, sensory therapy, and energy sculpting, we can guide you to a new, better, happier you.
Ooh,
which I
yeah.
think is directed by Panos Cosmatos.
Yes.
I'm not sure how you... Yeah.
Yes, who, by the way, is the son of George Cosmatos, the director of Rambo First Blood Part 2.
Oh, my God. That changes everything.
Yeah. He also directed Tombstone.
What?
Yeah.
Wait, hold on. All right. That actually changes everything. No. This is his first movie. He's the new director. Panos Cosmatos directed Mandy, which is out now, starring Nick Cage, which we will get to in 25 years. I don't think it works. So in preparation for seeing that, I wanted to watch his first movie. And this is a horror movie, quote-unquote, about a woman at, like, some sort of institution and you know, the horrors that happen there.
Yeah.
Is in that type of genre of horror movie. But it's really mostly like a 2-hour meditation, on like, can we do this on a movie? is how I felt. It's just purely experimental, and it looks like it's filmed on 16mm. I have no idea what it's filmed on, or if it's just got a filter on it cause it's digital, cause it's set in 1983. So it's got that very analog, grainy, there's lots of shots of dudes, like, or a dude turning a knob and it makes like a like weird, like, you know, sci-fi 80s noise. And it's like, oh, that's my jam. And it's just, it's absolutely bizarre. I gave the description of a plot because that's the plot that is given on Shudder, which is where I watched this.
Yeah.
But, like, there's not really a action happening.
No.
So if you're down to watch a 2-hour, basically experimental movie that's completely psychedelic and insane, this is the movie for you. It has some of the creepiest and weird, it's sort of like Eraserhead, I feel like.
Yeah.
It's just this bizarre take on a film, and I know you have seen it, right?
Yes. Yeah, I saw it years ago though, so I would really like to rewatch it again because it's so like far away from my memory now. But I do remember that like sense of unease that I felt when watching it. But yeah, my friend at the time, this was like 2010 when it came out, and my friend happened to work for a film website, got to go to this festival, and then when he came back, like, there were bigger movies at that festival, but the only one he could talk about was Beyond the Black Rainbow, and so I'm like, you gotta see this movie. And so then I finally did, like, maybe a year later when it came out on Blu-ray or something. So I saw it back in, like, 2010, 2011, but I have not seen it since. But as soon as, like, I remember paying so much close attention to Mandy when it was first announced, because Panos Cosmatos was back, and he hasn't made a movie since. And he got Nick Cage to be in it, and like it was such a melding of things that I was all about. And then I read the plot description from Mandy, and I was like, this is going to be so much my shit. It's not even funny.
It's a movie made explicitly for you.
Yeah, and that's the thing. We're going to talk about Mandy eventually when we get to it on The Complete Works. We probably won't do a review on Film Bookcast because what's the point? We will get to it on The Complete Works.
Yeah.
But it is out in theaters right now in limited release. And I know it's kind of playing near you.
Yes.
But for me, I just moved to Montana, and I don't have as many theaters readily available to me. However, there is one indie theater here that is 5 minutes from my house that is showing Mandy for one showtime on one night only 3 weeks from now.
And you're going to be first in line.
I have already bought my ticket.
Yes, that's amazing.
So yeah, I'm on board for that. I actually already pre-ordered the Blu-ray for Mandy too.
Jesus.
I've been pretty hyped about this movie for a long time. Cuz the Blu-ray comes out in October or like something
yeah,
like that. So
I think I did see that.
Yeah, so I'm pretty excited about that. And it's available on video on demand right now. So if you do want to watch it right now, if you can't see it in the theater, that's probably your best bet.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're all very excited for Mandy here in Mike World.
Yes. So, but the thing I had tweeted about Beyond the Black Rainbow is I never really thought that David Lynch would have a, like, successor.
Yeah.
And I really think that Panos Cosmatos might be it. There is a segment, a sequence in Beyond the Black Rainbow that felt like it was straight out of Twin Peaks The Return.
Okay.
So I would be interested in hearing your reaction to seeing it post-Twin Peaks, because you haven't seen it in 8 years or whatever it's been.
Yeah.
So I think watch it and then compare it to Twin Peaks in your brain and let me know what you think, because it's wild.
Yeah, will do.
The other things I want to talk about, I watched Jack Ryan on Amazon Prime, the complete season, the first season that's out.
You do this often? Kidnapping people off the street and interrogate them.
You're my first one, actually. How am I doing?
Shoot me. I drop this and we all die.
Starring, what's his name? Jim from The Office.
Jim from The Office, the director of A Quiet Place.
Yeah, yeah.
John Krasinski.
Look, it's been 2 months. So yeah, I'm out of practice.
I'm sure John Krasinski loves being referred to as Jim from The Office.
It also stars, I can't believe I'm going to remember this guy's name, Wendell Pierce, from the Bunk from The Wire. I'll give him that one. If you've seen the old movies, they had a Clear and Present Danger, all those Harrison Ford movies, and the Alec Baldwin one, Hunt for Red October, you've basically seen it. It's a CIA analyst gets thrown into the field and all this crazy shit happens. It is really good though. I did like it. It feels a lot sort of like 24, but without the like network-ness of it.
Okay.
You know? And it is one of the first times that I've watched a show on streaming that I have like sort of felt the I don't know how to put it, like the medium of streaming television now like become very apparent, where yeah. like the especially the first and like second episodes where it's like kind of slow build, the last 5 minutes insane shit happens, and then you know you get that like next episode starts in 8-7.
Right.
It's like, okay, yeah, let's keep going. And then I've watched 5 hours of TV at once. Like, what the... I don't know. It's just, that was a weird thing that happened to me, I sort of became aware of that. But that said, it is still really good. It's intense. It spends a lot of time explaining sort of both sides of what's going on, rather than sort of just being like racist depiction of Islamic, like, terrorist people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it sort of explains what's going on and why it's happening and stuff, which I appreciated. But it's cool. I think John Krasinski is going to have a long career as long as Amazon still has every dollar in the world to make these movies or these shows. And then the other thing I want to talk about is Goliath, season one I watched, which is another Amazon Prime original.
Okay.
This stars Billy Bob Thornton. It's a legal drama where he's a former top lawyer. He's a named partner at this big firm, and now he's a drunk living in a motel working like traffic court kind of thing. And a client comes to him with a case against his former firm. And like, you know, he's back, baby, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's awesome. He's just like, I feel like he's just playing Billy Bob Thornton. He's just like this scummy dirtbag with the Southern accent. but it's also very funny. The cast, everyone, a supporting cast, is really great. Maria Bello's in it. Olivia Thirlby, William Hurt's in it, which is weird and awesome. William Hurt is a character who plays a character that's basically like Lex Luthor. I don't know. It's really weird. He's the head of the like big firm, and he's got this like weird sort of disfigurement thing going on, and he's just like in the dark, and it's like only half of his face is lit for a lot of the time.
Yeah.
He's, like, it's very odd, like whatever they were trying to do with his character, because it's from a different show, like whatever, like what he's doing. but it's cool, and the intrigue and mystery surrounding the case that they're doing is fun and exciting to watch them uncover.
Yeah.
So there is a second season that I'm excited to get into, but definitely recommend jumping into Goliath and Jack Ryan.
Cool. All right, and that wraps up Mike's discussions. And now, okay, so here's what I did for my discussions. It has been 2 months since we've recorded a podcast. I've watched a lot of things in that time. So I took all of the 2018 movies that I watched, and I figured I'd just go through them one by one. I don't have any notes down here. I'm just going to go through the movies, say something about them real quick, and move on to the next thing, because we're not going to be here all day. So I got 10 movies to talk about.
Good luck.
Yeah, first up, we got 8th grade.
She's a different generation than us. She's
not
to
a different generation.
Yeah, she is.
She's 4 years younger than us. I mean.
Okay, but people who are like 4 years older than us felt like fucking 50 years old.
It's like blatantly not true.
Your sister?
My sister just sucks.
Okay, but like on top of that, she didn't have Twitter in middle school, and we did. That made us different.
Kayla, you're not different than us.
Well, yeah. When did you get Snapchat? What grade?
Fifth grade?
The new movie from director Bo Burnham. I've been a big fan of Bo Burnham for a long time. So I was pretty excited about this. And this stars Elsie Fisher. And it's a coming of age story about this girl during the last week of 8th grade, trying to make friends, trying to fit in. This movie's amazing. It's fantastic. You thought Hereditary was the scariest movie of the year? Because 8th grade may have it beat. This movie is awkward and really, just really intense in certain scenes, but it's also really funny, and it's very realistic. I saw this with a female friend of mine, and during like certain parts of the movie, she turned to me and she was like, "That happened to me when I was in 8th grade." Like, what's...
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So, it's great. Go see 8th grade. I think it's probably, of the movies I'm talking about in my discussions today, it is the best one by far. It is fantastic. And then I also wanted to mention Teen Titans Go to the Movies.
You saw it.
I did
see it. The Madman.
I did see this. Nicolas Cage is in this movie, so we're going to have to talk about it at some point. But this is the... movie adaptation of the Teen Titans Go TV show on Cartoon Network. And I've seen bits of the show here and there. It's a pretty funny show. And this movie's very funny. It's a really enjoyable movie. It kind of plays like Deadpool for kids. There's a lot of wacky fourth wall humor. There's a lot of like really random bits. There's actually some really dark jokes in this that I really loved. I'm going to spoil one now, if that's okay. So spoilers for Teen Titans Go to the Movies.
Okay. I'll let it go this time.
There's a bit in the movie where the plot of the movie is that the Teen Titans are trying to get a movie made about them because every other superhero has a movie based about them. So what they do is they go back in time and they stop all the other superheroes' origins from happening so that they're the only heroes left. So they like save Krypton and they keep Batman's parents away from the alley and that kind of thing. And then when they go back to the real world, after they do all this, they discover that the world is in terrible shambles and chaos because there's no superheroes.
Yeah. Makes sense.
So what they do is they go back in time again and make all those origins happen again.
Oh, no.
And there's literally a bit where they push Batman's parents into the alley.
Oh, my God. Shock.
It's pretty amazing. It feels kind of a piece with like the Lego Batman movie where it's kind of taking this beloved DC property and just setting it up in a big way. So I highly recommend Teen Titans Go to the Movies. If you're a comics fan, I think it's super funny and super worth checking out. And then I saw The Meg, which, is short for The Megalodon. this one has Jason Statham fighting a giant shark, so obviously I was going to see it. Yeah. But honestly, a little disappointed in The Meg. It's a little, it kind of pulls its punches when it shouldn't have, you know. It's a PG-13 like big blockbuster. This is directed by John Turteltaub, a friend of our other podcast. He directed National Treasure, National Treasure 2, The Sorcerer's Apprentice. This is a PG-13 movie and it feels like it should be bloodier. You know, it's a big gigantic shark action movie with Jason Statham fighting the shark. But it's got a solid ensemble. I mean, it's Jason Statham, it's got Rainn Wilson, Ruby Rose in this movie being awesome. So there's that. It's not terrible, and it does kind of take forever to get to where it goes. But like, some of the action scenes are cool, but it just feels like there should have been more there. And then we got Black Klansman, which is the new movie from director Spike Lee.
Hello, this is Ron Stallworth calling.
Who am I speaking with?
This is David Duke,
Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan. That David Duke?
God, last time I checked. What can I do for?
Well,
since you asked, I hate blacks. I hate Jews,
Mexicans and Irish, Italians and Chinese.
But my mouth to God's ears, I really hate those black rats. And anyone else, really, that doesn't have pure white Aryan blood running through their veins.
I'm happy to be talking to a true white American.
God bless white America.
And this is pretty solid. It kind of hits a lot of the same points that other movies this year have hit, like Sorry to Bother You and Blindspotting. And I love that these kinds of movies are coming out this year. I think that's pretty awesome. This is a movie that takes place in the 70s. It's a true story about the first black officer in a town in Colorado, I want to say, who infiltrates the Ku Klux Klan. Topher Grace plays David Duke in this movie. Adam Driver's in this, and there is some fantastic stuff going on in Black Klansman. I think the trailer sold it as more like a kind of action comedy, and it's not really that. It kind of builds and builds, and it's not subtle, but it's definitely not meant to be. And I found it really powerful, especially towards the end. So Black Klansman, new Spike Lee joint, worth checking out. And then if you want something lighter, there's this movie called Ibiza that I watched on Netflix. This is a Netflix original, which came out a couple months ago. And I had this in my queue for a while, and I didn't know when I was going to watch it. And then it was here my first week in Montana. I had nothing to do And I didn't have like a TV or anything, so I was like, what can I just easily watch on my computer without like worrying about visual things? And so Ibiza was the movie I chose. It's a new comedy starring Gillian Jacobs, Vanessa Bayer, and Phoebe Robinson, all actresses who I like a lot. And it's a movie about Gillian Jacobs, who falls in love with a DJ and tries to fuck him the entire time. And and speaking as a DJ who has a crush on Gillian Jacobs, this movie really spoke to me, Mike.
Jesus Christ.
But, you know, I actually really enjoyed this. This was a pretty funny movie. It's very similar to Girls Trip in a lot of ways, but it's basically just them going to Ibiza, partying, having a good time. Vanessa Bayer is hilarious in this movie. She was always, like, my favorite SNL cast member when she was on that show, so it's cool to see her get, like, this kind of standout role in this movie. But this is a Netflix original, so it's pretty funny. It's worth checking out. The DJ is played by Richard Madden, who was Robb Stark in Game of Thrones. So,
wow, interesting.
Yeah, so there's that. And then I saw The Miseducation of Cameron Post, which is a new coming-of-age drama starring Chloe Moretz as a gay teen who gets sent to a conversion therapy camp, where John Gallagher Jr. plays like the conversion therapy dude. And this is a very solid drama. I liked it a lot. Chloe Moretz is great in the movie. You know, it's very, I think, true to life, and it kind of shines a light on how fucked up that whole system is. John Gallagher Jr. plays a guy who's very... he makes a character that you can hate really easily, but you also kind of understand where he's coming from and, like, where his thought process is and stuff like that. So I really enjoyed The Miseducation of Cameron Post. I think it's really well worth checking out. It's also got a scene where Chloe Moretz does a karaoke to What's Up by Four Non Blondes, and I love that song, so that's great. and then I saw this movie called Madeline's Madeline, which is this experimental drama that I saw a few critics tweeting about, and then that played for like two nights here in Missoula at the Indie Theater, so I decided to go check it out. And it's pretty solid. It's about a girl who joins a dance troupe, and she has this strained relationship with her mother, but she gets fulfilled by her dance teacher, and she starts to create a show based on her own life, and goes to some really weird places, some very odd places, and it's very kind of David Lynch-esque in sort of the same way that Beyond the Light Rainbow is. So that's it's worth checking out. I wasn't the biggest fan of it, but I was glad I saw it anyway. But I still have a few more here to go through. Crazy Rich Asians, I saw that movie.
Rich, we've been dating for over a year now, and I think it's about time people met my beautiful girlfriend. What about us taking an adventure east?
Like Queens?
Singapore, Colin's wedding. Don't you want to be my family?
I hardly know anything about them. Every time I bring them up, Nick changes the subject. Maybe his parents are poor and he has to send them money.
I'll take a bag and get you checked into first class.
Nick, we can't afford this. So your family is rich?
We're comfortable.
That is exactly what a super rich person would say.
And this was the new romantic comedy. This was a big hit. I'm sure you saw some of that. And this is pretty significant because it is an entirely... basically an entirely all-Asian cast, which is the first time that's happened in Hollywood in, like, 25 years, something like that, which is pretty wild. And I enjoyed it. It's a pretty solid romantic comedy. I think the characters are all fun. Basically, every Asian actor you can think of is probably in this movie. It's got... and even ones that, like, I didn't even think of were in this movie. Like, John Yoo from Silicon Valley is in this. Ken Jeong shows up for a scene and that kind of thing. So yeah, worth checking out. Crazy Rich Asians, pretty solid. And then the next movie I saw is also a heavily Asian cast, actually. Searching, which I really liked. This is the new movie starring John Cho and his daughter who disappears and he has to find her. And it's all told through the computer screen in the same way that the Unfriended movies work. It's actually produced by Timur Bekmambetov, who also produced Unfriended. So Searching... I really enjoyed this. I think I liked this a little more than Unfriended. And I liked Unfriended a lot. Didn't see Unfriended 2, but I liked Unfriended. And yeah, I think it used the technology in a really interesting way. John Cho is great in it. And it's a really compelling mystery. It's really worth checking out. It kind of reminded me of American Vandal. But in the way that the mystery starts to come together, it kind of reminded me of American Vandal.
Interesting.
But, so there was that. And then finally, my last movie. And this was one I saw. Actually, I double featured this with The Predator. Because it opened the same weekend. I saw A Simple Favor.
Want to trade confessions?
No.
Come on. What's the wildest thing you've ever done?
She's an enigma, my wife. You can get close to her. You can never quite reach her. She's like a beautiful ghost.
Did you just take my picture?
Erase it. I guess I'm probably not the kind of person you're normally friends with.
Oh, you do not want to be friends with me. Trust me.
Which is the new movie from director Paul Feig. And have you seen some stuff about this movie, Mike?
Yeah, I've heard that generally that it's good, but I don't know what it is, though.
Okay, so this stars Anna Kendrick and Blake Lively. And if you watch the trailers for this movie, I feel like they kind of misrepresent what the movie actually is, because you watch the trailers and it's like, from the darker side of director Paul Feig, and I was like, what?
wait, hold on.
And it is sort of like that. It's less of a mainstream comedy than he has made in the past, because Paul Feig, I mean, he made Bridesmaids, he made the Ghostbusters movie, and stuff like that. So A Simple Favor is more like, this is much a lower budgeted movie than he usually makes. This is like a $20 million budget. And it's kind of this pseudo-erotic thriller, but it's different. It's more of a comedy take on it. And so there's bits in the movie that's making me laugh. Like, it seems like he's setting up the entire genre while also making a pretty solid entry into that genre. You know what I mean?
It's the best way to do it.
Exactly, though. Yeah. And so it's, like, for a while you're not even sure if it's comedy or whatever, but then there's, like, bits where it's like, okay, this is absolutely, like, it's meant to be funny. And, yeah, Anna Kendrick and Blake Lively are both great in this movie. Also stars Henry Golding, who was the lead of Crazy Rich Asians. And, yeah, I really enjoyed A Simple Favor. The mystery is great. There's a bit, like, towards, like, about halfway through, I realized they were, like, he was trying to do, like, it seemed like they were doing, like, a sort of a send-up of Diabolique, which is a French movie from the 50s, which I'm a big fan of.
Only you would have that, like, would say that.
Well, okay, here's the thing. I was watching it, and I was like, I think they're doing, like, Diabolique. This seems like a Diabolique type thing. And then, like, 10 minutes later in the movie, Anna Kendrick turns to somebody. It's like, are you trying to Diabolique me? And I was like, oh, fuck! Yeah!
Oh, my God. I'm glad you had that experience.
I was alone in that theater. But it's pretty great. I really recommend A Simple Favor. Honestly, of the movies I've talked about today, Eighth Grade, probably my favorite. A Simple Favor might be my second favorite of those movies. And then third is probably Searching. So all worth checking out. And I think all these movies, I didn't dislike any of them. So, you know, go see those movies. If you can remember all 10 of the movies that I just talked about in quick succession. Anyway, Mike, I think that about wraps up our discussions, hopefully. Yes. And we can finally move on into our featured review of The Predator.
Welcome to the Looney Bus.
McKenna.
Here, Brask Williams.
That's Coyle.
That's Lynch.
With Murphs.
Why are you here?
I don't think you believe me.
Come on, man.
I had a run-in with a space alien.
This fucking guy is crazier than the rest of us.
What the fuck was that?
That's the thing that killed my men.
Alien. Guess who's back? It ain't a fucking question.
Now in the presence of a living legend. Predators. They exploit weakness. Tracks its prey. Like a game. Seems to enjoy it.
That's not a predator. That's a sports hunter.
Well, we took a vote. Predator's cooler, right? Fuck yeah.
All right, that was from the trailer for The Predator, the new movie written by Shane Black and Fred Decker and directed by Shane Black. It stars Boyd Holbrook, Trevante Rhodes, Jacob Tremblay, Olivia Munn, Keegan-Michael Key, Thomas Jane, Alfie Allen, Sterling K. Brown, Yvonne Strahovski, and Jake Busey, among others. And the IMDb plot synopsis for The Predator reads, when a young boy accidentally triggers the universe's most lethal hunter's return to Earth, only a ragtag crew of ex-soldiers and a disgruntled science teacher can prevent the end of the human race. So before we get into The Predator, I think we should address the controversy that surrounded this movie in the weeks beforehand. So the conversation surrounding this basically goes like this. It was reported that 20th Century Fox had to cut a scene from this movie because the actor in it was a sex offender, right. Was basically what happened. And then more details kind of came to light. I guess that guy was Shane Black's friend, and this happened a long time ago, and Shane Black had kind of, like, cast him in a couple movies since then, but hadn't really told anybody about the situation of him being a sex offender.
Right.
And the scene in question involved him, I think he was, like, a jogger, and he hits on Olivia Munn. And I guess Olivia Munn found out about it after the fact, told Fox about it, and Fox pulled the thing. And so the controversy surrounding this is like, well, what the hell happened here? Like, should, you know, obviously we saw the movie. We didn't, like, boycott it.
Yeah.
You know, I think ultimately it's just Shane Black made a mistake It's a big mistake. Don't get me wrong. And it's one of those things where it's like I think he didn't. I really genuinely think he didn't realize how big his friend's what he thought it was like a misunderstanding or something.
I hope so, because Shane Black is like I don't remember the exact statement, but it was something along the lines of like, oh, this he's paid his dues. It was a long time ago. He, you know, all this stuff, and it was just a big misunderstanding. But it's like dude, like, tried to have sex with, like, his 14-year-old cousin and shit. Yeah. Like, not so great, Shane Black.
Yeah.
And then I think the controversy sort of became the rest of the cast response. Because, like, nobody came out in support of Olivia Munn at the beginning.
Right. I think it took
a few days. And
sort
of, like, shunned her, yeah.
Yeah, but at the same time, I'm not sure if it was a shunning. I think it was more like they wanted to take a few days to really collect what was happening because they didn't.
I guess so, yeah.
Because I feel like I think people expect an immediate reaction because Twitter exists now and they.
Right.
But I think there is value in just taking time to consider what's going on around you so you get all the details. But yeah, no, I think this doesn't look good for anybody involved, basically, except for Olivia Munn. But anyway, so that was kind of the controversy surrounding The Predator ahead of time. The scene was cut, the movie came out. Otherwise, I was pretty hyped for this movie. You know, I'm a big fan of Shane Black's work as a director and a writer. I've seen everything he's done. I mean, he just came out with The Nice Guys a couple years ago, which we were both huge fans of. I think I named that as my number two movie that year. I think you might have as well. I think you might have also called it.
It was definitely
two.
At the top if it wasn't number one. I don't remember what year that was, but
yeah. So on top of being big Shane Black fans, I'm also a big fan of the Predator series, or at least if I'm not a fan of the series as a whole, it's just a series that I really enjoy. If you know what I mean. Like I'm a big fan of the first Predator. The first Predator is a stone cold action classic. It's great. And then I about a year and a half ago, I went to the Alamo Drafthouse in Yonkers and I did a double feature of Predator and Predator 2. They showed both of them on 35mm. And it kind of gave me a renewed appreciation for Predator 2. Because I did not like that movie.
Yeah.
When I first saw it. And you haven't seen Predator 2, right?
Yeah, I don't think I've seen it. No.
Okay. It's a solid, it's not great. I wouldn't call it good. But I would call it like enjoyably shitty. Like it's,
yeah,
you know, it's, and I think there is like some style behind it and it's got an incredible cast. It's got Danny Glover in the lead, Bill Paxton, Maria Conchita Alonso, Gary Busey's in there, and like it's just kind of nuts. And I love that movie's vision. Like that movie was made in 1990, and it takes place in 1997, and it's supposed to be like the future Los Angeles, and it's just this crime war zone thing between the cops and the cartels, and it's pretty awesome. And I really just love that movie's vision of like how much Los Angeles would go to shit in 7 years.
Time. Yeah,
but especially like the opening scene of that movie. There's stuff in that opening scene that like I had never seen before, where it's like Danny Glover like breaks the windows of the cop car and then like straps some bulletproof vests on there so he can drive through without getting shot. It's like that's not how that works, but I'm in. But anyway, yeah. So Predator 2, it's trashy, but it's enjoyable. And I also rewatched Predators before I went to see the Predator, and I gotta say I enjoyed it quite a bit. I think it's a pretty solid entry in the Predator canon. And I think Adrian Brody is actually way better than people give him credit for when that movie first came out.
Yeah, that's Robert Rodriguez too, right?
He produced it. He didn't direct it.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, that was directed by a guy named Nimrod Antal. I don't think he's directed anything since, but I'm not entirely sure. But yeah, but that's something that, you know, I was more into than I was expecting. So I was going into this pretty hyped. So I love Shane Black. I was pretty into the Predator movies. And I couldn't remember the last time I had seen a Shane Black movie that I didn't enjoy. And then I remembered that there is one that I don't really like, which is the other movie that he wrote with Fred Decker, which is The Monster Squad in 1987, which I don't know if you've seen The Monster Squad.
I've heard of it, but I don't know if I've seen it, one, and two, knew it was a Shane Black movie.
That movie is a movie that there's definitely fans of that movie. There are people who love The Monster Squad. I think you had to have been a kid in the 80s to really like be somebody who likes The Monster Squad. I don't think it's that good. But still, you know, Shane Black's a good writer-director with a distinct style. He was in the original Predator also. We should mention that. He played Hawkins.
Right.
So it did feel like a homecoming of sorts. So, Mike, what was your take on his version of The Predator?
So, like we talked about, we're big fans of Shane Black, and I was very excited for it until that whole controversy thing happened. And unfortunately, I think that kind of colored my response to The Predator. I did not really like this movie.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, at certain points or on a certain level, like, I think the action and just, like, straight up gore that goes on in this movie is really cool and is fun. But I think just sort of overall, it feels very disconnected to it, or disjointed. There seems to be, like, weird time cuts that, like, the sun was up and now it's not. And now we're right. it's supposed to be story-wise the next moment. And it's like, wait a second, huh? Like, weird stuff like that. I mean, it has the you know, all the Shane Black things that I love, the witty banter and the kid that's way cooler than there should be or way more capable than they should be, and that's always awesome. And I don't know if it was just, you know, the thinking about what happened and it's just the stuff that surrounded it. Like, some of the witty banter stuff, like, there's one scene in particular I'll get into spoilers where I was like, nope. Like, nope, I'm out. Not good anymore. I can't do that.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't know what it was. It's just sort of nothing really landed for me, unfortunately.
Okay.
With that stuff. But, like, I don't know. I guess not just straight up cold. I'm not ice cold on it, but not less than lukewarm. What's between those two, Mike?
I don't know, man. What's cooler than being cool?
Ice cold. You're right. Yeah, so not a positive response from me.
Okay, that's interesting. I mean, I think what has been interesting is seeing the divide online. This has been a very divisive movie. Like, it's gotten like a 60-something on Rotten Tomatoes, and I think, you know, people who usually like Shane Black movies, some of them aren't as big on this. I will say, I think this is one of his weakest movies, but for the most part, I think it works. I liked a lot of this movie. I do agree that there is a lot of shaggy stuff going on in it. I also feel like that might be kind of the charm. It feels like a little bit of a throwback to the 80s, but with a more modern sensibility, which I think he did really well. He kind of melded both of those together in Iron Man 3 as well. And I think he did that much better there. It sort of misses the mark, but I also kind of liked just watching it. It's super violent, which I think for a Predator movie is key. I think the characters are very fun. I enjoyed watching a lot of these characters. It does some new things with the Predators that haven't been done before. And it's got that Shane Black quippy banter, and the subversion of expectations that he always does in his movies. And honestly, like, it has that sheen, and I think the substance underneath it all, maybe not all that much there, but I feel like there's so much stuff that's just enjoyable about it on the outside that I was like, yeah, all right, Predator. Here we go. To me, it's like the platonic ideal of a Predator sequel, where it's just like super violent, characters are quipping, they die, it's fun. You know, it's not great. I don't think it's great, but I think it is fun. I think it might be the best one since the original, at least in my eyes. But that said, like, it is a mess. It's a mess of a movie, especially towards the end. I think it really does kind of smell of, like, studio meddling, I think, in a lot of scenes. And the editing feels really choppy. I mean, characters will appear and disappear. There are vehicles that just, like, randomly show up, and there's a certain death, there's one death in particular, but certain deaths aren't given the weight that they should have gotten. There's one character who dies, and it's like a blink and you'll miss it moment, and it's like, that should have been, like, a big moment.
I might have missed it. I'm interested to know.
Okay. we'll talk about it in spoilers, but, what I do love about this is it does continue the Predator tradition of having an amazing ensemble cast. So in that first movie, right, you got Schwarzenegger, you got Jesse Ventura, you got Carl Weathers. Second movie, Danny Glover, Bill Paxton, Gary Busey, Marie Conchita Alonso. In Predators, you've got Adrian Brody, and you've got Danny Trejo, and Lawrence Fishburne, and Walton Goggins is in that movie, and Mahershala Ali. The Predators cast is probably the best cast overall. It's kind insane. Of amazing. And then in this movie, I mean, you've got, you know, Sterling K. Brown, who I think is the easy standout of this movie. He's a lot of fun to watch when he's on screen. Olivia Munn, also great in this movie. Regardless of all the stuff that happened, like, in the press beforehand, I think she is fantastic here. Also, I really love Keegan-Michael Key playing... he's basically playing Shane Black's role from the original movie. he's great. I think his relationship with Thomas Jane is great. I really liked the Loonies. I liked that whole gang of characters. Because I feel like just having that kind of anarchic, gleeful violence with a ragtag group of misfits, that's like my jam right there.
It's like a double bird to Suicide Squad.
Yes. It actually kind of does, it does sort of play a little bit like Suicide Squad in that regard, but I think it does it much more successfully than Suicide Squad does. So yeah, there's just something here that I can kind of like compulsively watch. I don't think it's great, but I think it's something that I will watch anytime it's on like HBO or something. Like, it's just going to be one of those things where I can have it on. Otherwise, what other non-spoilery thoughts about The Predator, Mike? Anything else you wanted to say?
I will say that I do enjoy, or I did enjoy the, like you said, the what it does with the Predators and where it goes with the story, like the overarching story, like of the franchise as a whole, and what they new abilities and weird shit going on there. That was cool. I did enjoy that stuff. It's just and the action, as always with Shane Black, is awesome. It's just that too much of the other stuff didn't work for me, unfortunately.
Yeah, fair enough. I will say the CGI is a little shabby in this movie too.
Yes, which I guess we'll get to in spoilers, but it's super odd, I think.
Yeah, well, it's weird. I mean, I think the CG, it's towards the end is really where it gets kind of rough. But for the most, like, when the movie first starts, you're mostly dealing with, like, practical effects.
Right? Which is what my thing is, like, yeah.
And then it kind of, as it goes on, you get more CGI stuff, and it's like, but the CGI doesn't look as good, so why are we doing this? You
know? Why is this here?
But, yeah, all right. I think we've kind of given our main, I think we've kind of given our brief reactions. I feel like we should probably get into spoilers for some of this other stuff.
Yeah.
Right? All right, so let's do that. Let's get into spoilers for The Predator, starting right now.
Stop it! In front of me! You're spoiling it! You're spoiling everything!
All right, so spoilers for The Predator, starting right now. So, for a while, I was watching this, and I was like, oh, wow, this is going to be the first Predator movie where most of the characters make it out alive.
Yeah.
Right? Because the way every other movie is structured is, like, the Predator kind of picks off the characters one by one throughout the movie. And in this movie, they're all alive until the third act, where everything just kind of goes haywire and everything goes balls up. Yep. So, yeah, I was watching and I was like, wow, they're all going to make it out of this. And then, nope.
And they even, like, explicitly say that. They're like, we split up. It's going to pick us off one by one. That's how this thing works.
Right.
I'm like, oh, okay. We're aware. It's interesting.
Well, that's the thing. I feel like Shane Black's movies are filled with self-aware characters. And that kind of thing. And so you have, moments like that throughout this movie that I think mostly work. I think they're pretty funny. There's one great bit where Yvonne Strahovski is playing Boyd Holbrook's wife, and she gives this big speech about Boyd Holbrook and how he's a great soldier, and nobody reacts to it. And
yeah.
And it's a very Shane Black thing where it's like she gives this whole thing about like how he's decorated all these medals and things, and like this beat, and the key he's like, well, sounds like he can take care of himself.
He just takes the remote. I mean, like, there are things that scene did work for me, and there are moments mostly where the Shane Black stuff that I love, the quips and all that, do work. There's just a couple big ones that did not land for me, and it was enough to detract, and I hate to do that.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, man, these, like, 10 minutes or whatever, maybe not so great, but everything else is, like, okay, but that was enough for me to come out negative.
Okay, yeah. What moments in particular are you talking about? I think I know at least one that you're referencing.
There's the big one mostly was after they rescue, the loonies rescue Olivia Munn from the like military base breakout or whatever, and she accidentally tranks herself, and she wakes up, and like that was funny. Like, oh, we're taking bets on whether or not she's gonna grab the shotgun and stuff. Like, that was funny. But when she's leaving, and then Thomas Jane says with his Tourette's, like, either sheesh your pushy or eat your pussy or something
like that.
And it just becomes like a very became a very uncomfortable room full of 8 dangerous men making a weird sex joke at a vulnerable woman in this movie around this controversy about with a sexual offender in it.
Yeah.
And that was just enough to put me over the edge where, like, nah, I think I might be out for the rest of this movie.
Yeah. Fair enough. Now, if the controversy hadn't happened, would you still have had the same reaction, you think?
I don't know. And, like, I think that's part of the problem. like, society as a whole. Like, that scene should be uncomfortable and weird and not funny to people, I think. But it was enough for me to sort of be out. And then the other scene that didn't really make sense but made me think of it. And I think anytime the movie made me outside the movie become aware of, like, this outside controversy, like, where Olivia Munn strips naked and, like, I mean, I know she's trying to be decontaminated and get out of there, but, like, it sort of becomes, like, a plot point.
Yeah,
and
that was very odd.
And it doesn't come up ever again. And, like, she says it, but it's never used ever again, and it seemed very gratuitous in retrospect to have her do that.
Yeah,
not that they show anything, but you know what I mean?
Right, but that felt very like Mel Gazy in a weird way, and that, yes. That did feel odd. I'm with you on that, because that was, it just felt very, like there had to be another way you can have written that scene, you know, it was just weird. I get that, and I don't think that was enough to detract from the movie for me, but I understand where you're coming from. Definitely. But speaking of that scene with the Predator in the lab, I think the highlight of the movie is probably that scene where the Predator is breaking out of the lab.
Yes.
Because, I mean, that's just when the movie kind of lets loose with Predator action. And that's before you get to the Super Predator. Which, the thing is, like, you have this Predator in the beginning of the movie who is, like, a dude in a suit. It's like a prosthetic Predator.
Yes.
And then later on, you get the Super Predator who is CGI. And the CGI Super Predator never looks as cool as the dude in the suit. And so when you have the scene where the regular Predator is breaking out of the lab and just annihilating people left and right, it's awesome. It's so cool. It's like exactly what you want out of a Predator movie.
Yeah. And then, I guess you couldn't find an 11-foot guy to be the Super Predator thing. So like, sure. But like stilts exist. I don't know.
Get the guy who plays Chewbacca now to do it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I noticed that too. That scene, you know, right after that, or it's probably actually a little bit later at the school where the Super Predator shows up and like fights the regular Predator or kills it, I guess. It's like, wait a second, one of those is CGI. Wait, what? And then he kills the real one or the prosthetic one or you know, practical effects one.
Yeah,
it's like, oh, we got to watch this guy now. We got to watch the shitty looking one. Oh man.
Yeah, and I was still having fun with it, but it was kind of a bummer. Yeah, when the real Predator,
I mean,
died.
It's still cool, like as a concept for evolution of predators, and like the dog thing, the dog predators, the predator hounds or whatever the hell.
Predator dogs.
Predator dogs. I
was pro Predator dog. I enjoyed the Predator dogs.
I was too. That felt like a very Shane Black thing to me.
Yes.
And like, I will say, like that scene, that shot later on when they get in like the news helicopter or something, and they like zoom off into the night, and like the music swells, and the Predator dog is running underneath the helicopter in the spotlight. Yes. I was like, fuck yeah, this is so cool. and then it sort of got all wonky again. that's sort of where the like you said, the studio meddling might have shown up. In the very end, the third act stuff.
Yeah. From what I understand, I haven't read Shane Black's original script for this movie, but I know people online who have. And from what I understand, the third act that made it into theaters is very different from what the third act was originally. And that goes to the very end also. So the very end of the movie has this Predator killer suit, right? That's this big. So the movie happens, all the Predators get defeated. Spoilers, we're in the spoiler section. But we should talk about this ending, because I think the original intention for what they were going to do at the very end was really cool. And they didn't end up doing that reasons, but I'll get into that in a second. So the way the movie ends right now is the Predator gets defeated, and then like a few months pass, and Boyd Holbrook goes to this like secret base where his son is working now or whatever. And they discover that the Predator, the original Predator, who by the way was a good guy Predator, we find that out. He left a gift for humanity to defeat them, and it's called the Predator Killer. Now, when they said the Predator Killer, what did you think that was going to be? Instinctually, first thought, what did you think a Predator Killer was?
First thought, honestly, was was like a cryogenic Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I also thought Schwarzenegger, right? Once you hear Predator Killer, you're like, it's got to be Schwarzenegger.
And it's like coffin shaped.
Right. It looks like a human sized pod. So the pod opens. And then it's like this kind of armband, and somebody puts it on, and it's the Predator killer suit. It's basically like an Iron Man suit, but it's a Predator.
And
then the movie ends. And basically that should have been a post-credit scene, I think. Like, it's kind of weird that the movie ends on that note. But anyway, that's basically what happens. But the original intention was to get Schwarzenegger back.
No way.
Yeah, I guess the scene was originally written where it might not have been Schwarzenegger. It might have been different. He might not have come out of a pod, but like he would have shown up and like said, "Come with me." And like Boyd Holbrook was like, "What about my son?" And he's like, "No, he's coming too." And that kind of thing. And so the original intention was to get Schwarzenegger back, but he turned it down because he wanted it to be more than a cameo. He wanted a more substantial role if he was going to be in it. But still, if he had come back, man, that would have been something. And if they couldn't get Schwarzenegger, like, put Danny Glover or Adrian Brody in that pot or something. Like, give me something.
Oh, man, that would have been awesome.
Yeah.
Then my second reaction was, they can't be Schwarzenegger. It's going to be like a Xenomorph.
That would have been amazing,
we were going to finally bridge the gap.
That would have been amazing, too. But, yeah, no. But I think the one that would have made the most sense would have been Adrian Brody. Because that movie, I just rewatched Predators, and that movie ends with Adrian Brody still trapped on the Predator's planet. So it would have made sense if, like, he was in the pod from the Predator's planet. Like, yeah, and he killed Predators. He's the Predator killer, sure. So the way this movie ends, like, it's all right. It just feels kind of limp compared to what the ending could have been. But, yeah. But speaking of, I mean, so there's that whole third act where basically all the characters die at once. As opposed to other Predator movies where they die throughout the movie. And for some of them kind of work. I feel like Trevante Rhodes gets, like, his big moment. I feel like that should have been a bigger deal, too. But the one that really felt like it should have been a much bigger deal was when Sterling K. Brown died.
Yeah.
Because, okay, so I was going to ask if you caught it, because it happens in a split second, and he's dead.
I did notice that. But I have read, I saw on Reddit, I think, some controversy surrounding how people think he died. So I'm interested to hear what you have to say.
I'm pretty sure the Predator helmet or whatever shoots him or something, right? And his head explodes, something like that.
Yeah, because some people thought he shoots himself with the shoulder cannon that he has, because he turns and it's right next to him, pointing at his head.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's just weird, because Sterling K. Brown was basically the villain of this movie, the human villain of the movie, is not the Predators, right?
Right, yeah.
And he is really great in the role. I think he's fantastic as this kind of villain character. I think he's really funny. He's got those quips, those Shane Black quips that I enjoy so much. One of my favorite lines, which is in the trailer, is when... you know, they're talking about the Predator, and Olivia Munn points out, well, what you're describing isn't a Predator, it's a hunter. And it's like, yeah, we took a vote. Predator's cooler, right, guys? And everyone goes, yeah! And Sterling K. Brown goes, like, fuck yeah. And I love that. And I love that kind of attitude that he has as that character. But then when the movie is getting in that big, crazy climax, he dies in a split second, and nobody acknowledges it. Like, it's never brought up. His character's never brought up again. You know, it's just weird that, like, a character who was that prominent and who played such a big role throughout the movie is just off suddenly.
And, like, if I remember correctly, like, sort of Olivia Munn's character gets him killed, right? Because she, like, calls his name and he turns and looks at her and then his head blows up.
Maybe.
So it's I felt very weird. And you're right that it just, like, happens and we just move on.
Yeah,
sure, I guess.
It's very weird. But other deaths, though, I mean, I think Trevante Rhodes' death is all right. But I really love the death scenes for Keegan-Michael Key and Thomas Jane.
That was so weird to me. Their whole relationship.
Yeah, I mean, but they were weird characters, though, so it kind of makes sense that their relationship would feel kind of weird.
I guess so.
But I love the way, like, they both, like, died, like, at the same time, and they saw each other dying, and
they
killed each other. I thought that was pretty great. I love that shot of, like, their bodies just going limp.
Thomas Jane up in the tree.
Yeah.
He does have one of my favorite moments in the movie, too. Towards the end, you know, they're camping out the ship, and then the Predator, Super Predator attacks, and, you know, he like, snaps out of his, like, Tourette's symptoms or whatever, like, they all go away, and he becomes the hard-ass soldier he is.
Yes.
And Keegan-Michael Key says, oh, he's back, and he just goes, fuck you, I never left, and, like, cocks his gun. He's like, all right, yeah, that's hot, I'm in.
Yeah.
I don't know, it felt very odd, though, just, like, everything going on with them, which is fine. I did want to mention, I forgot earlier, part of the thing that made me feel sort of uncomfortable with everything going on, I don't remember the character who's obsessed with the end of the world, like, it's the end times.
Oh,
one of the loonies.
Yeah, I forget his name.
I forget his name. And his, like, obsession with Claire, I think is her name, Olivia Munn's character. And, like, he just keeps following her. And he, like, it sort of becomes a joke where he's like, oh, Claire, I'll be right back. And, like, you know, okay, don't, you know, I'm coming back, like, all this stuff.
Yeah.
But just, like, with everything else, that was another one of the, like, weird character things that kept coming up a lot more than just, like, the couple quips that made me come out of the movie.
Right.
I was like, oh, this is uncomfortable. Like, she's told him to stay away from her, and he keeps coming back, and it's like a joke that he won't go away. Was weird. So hopefully, Shane Black can adjust his quippiness, and his weird characters for 2018 and the future, because if it's more of this stuff in the future, I'm going to lose one of my favorite filmmakers, which sucks.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, I also feel like, you know, it's Shane Black, I think it's very weird because it's not like, I don't think of him as an offensive writer, director, or anything.
No.
But I think his sensibilities are very 80s in that sense. And I feel like that's throughout all of his movies. You know, that's kind of, that's present in, that kind of humor is there in, like, The Nice Guys and Kiss Kiss Bang Bang and stuff like that. But I feel like it depends on what the situation is, what the characters are saying, like, which character it is, like, how other characters react to it. And I feel like in this movie, you're there with a bunch of, like, deplorable people. You're there with the Suicide Squad, basically.
Yeah.
And so none of the characters are reacting in, like, a way like, oh, man, that shouldn't be happening. And so it's, like, you know, I get it. I get it. But it is, I feel like that sensibility has always been there in Shane Black's work, too.
Yeah, I agree. I think for the most part it worked. You know, like, specifically, I was thinking a lot about The Nice Guys and how that is very, you know, as deals with the porn industry and you know, the Shane Black child character is there through all of it.
Right. Dad, but there are horse here and stuff.
Horses. Yeah. There's don't like horse here. Yeah.
Don't say and stuff. Just there's horse here.
Yeah. But that's also in that movie is very much like a commentary on the '70s and like what the dirty, grimy shit that went on. And like, it makes sense for like a social commentary kind of way.
Yeah.
But I just hope, you know, he is able to adapt that to the era of now. and deal with it.
Yeah, fair enough. Other stuff throughout the movie. I think the movie does touch on a couple of interesting ideas, and they don't really go much further than that. But one of them is that the predators are coming here because of global warming. Right. Yeah. That was a bit. They kind of just threw that in, like, and it was like a really heavy thing. I was like, what?
Yeah. There's a lot of moments that feel like just because the movie is feels very choppy and chopped up. That's like just. Like exposition dump. Like,
exactly.
We need to have Olivia Munn, who's a scientist, explain to the dumb people, like the loonies, like how evolution works. And these guys are stealing spinal fluid from all the like things. And like, we're just going to in front of a whiteboard, explain it. And then we're going back to murdering people.
Yeah. I think one of my favorite moments in the movie actually, and the moment that like revealed to me that like this movie is pretty dumb, but like in an enjoyable way, is that I think it's when after the school it's after the school action scene, and the super predator is there, and they're getting away, and Olivia Munn like looks back and like, did you see that? He just grew an exoskeleton under his skin. And then I thought about it for a second, and it's like, that's not how exoskeletons work.
That's not what that means.
It's in the name. So once like that line happens, I was like, "All right, we're just in for a dumb fun time." And
that's pretty late in the movie.
That's about halfway through.
I think. Okay, that's fair.
But yeah, so then it does touch on like ideas like the predators coming here because of global warming and like humans only have like 100 years left or something like that. And that's like a really heavy idea to just throw in there. And then they also have the idea that like autism can fight predators or something like
the next evolutionary step.
Right, which is also, like, really thrown in there. And I feel like Olivia Munn's line was, like, very odd when, like, the way she delivered that or whatever. I mean, it's a weird line when she has to say it. But yeah, and so that and it ends up being, like, Jacob Tremblay and, like, his role is much bigger in the movie than you think it is. And I as far as, like, the kid protagonist of Shane Black movies go, I'm not the biggest on Jacob Tremblay. I feel like The Nice Guys, Angry Rice is, like, the prime example of, like... the kid protagonist. She's great.
Yeah.
But Jacob Tremblay here, I think he's, I think it's partially what he's given to do. You know, I just don't think like the autism kid is like that interesting. And like, but also like not the big, again, I don't like child actors that much.
So. No. I mean, for most of the movie, he types on a CG keyboard. Like that's all he's doing.
Right. That's true.
You know? So like, there's not a whole lot going on.
Yeah. I do like when he gets to say fuck. I enjoyed that.
I forget what it says, but it's pretty awesome.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah. And you know, there's just fun Shane Black quips throughout. I feel like we keep mentioning, there's fun Shane Black quips throughout. Because there are. Like, the movie is very quippy.
That's like his whole thing, yeah.
Yeah, it's got... one of my favorite bits is actually with Jacob Tremblay and Boyd Holbrook towards the end, where Boyd Holbrook is like, there's not going to be any killing today. And then, like, Jacob Tremblay points at the guy that he just killed. And is like, starting right now. And like...
But also that scene, like, that right before that has one of the weirdest continuity... errors, quote unquote, you can call it that. Right before that, when they open the door, where all of a sudden Sterling K. Brown is wearing sunglasses, where he wasn't before, and they walk onto the alien ship and he is.
Right.
Very odd. Yeah, I got nervous right, honestly, the very, very beginning when we see the predator crashing to Earth, right? And he ejects, the good one, we find out, ejects from his escape pod, you know, in his escape pod or whatever, and he starts crashing to Earth while it's sun, like, while the sun is up, sunset. And then we cut to Boyd, or whatever his name is, on his, like, sniper mission against the cartel, and it's full-blown nighttime, and then the ship crashes.
Right.
It's like, what? Like, it was falling before. What happened? Like, that was so weird. But other than that, like, that opening scene, you know, where the ship crashes and him watching his two guys get slaughtered in the forest was cool. Like, the first instance of the Predator back.
Yeah.
With the camouflage and all that stuff. So, other than, like, the weird continuity error, that scene was cool.
Yeah, cool. I think for the most part, the action scenes are cool.
Yeah.
I will say, I think it's interesting that we've talked about this movie for probably, like, 30 minutes now, and we've barely mentioned Boyd Holbrook, who is the star of this movie.
He's the Jai Courtney of... of Predator movies.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think so, I saw somebody talking about it, and it's like, yeah, I thought Sam Worthington was great. I mean, Charlie Hunnam. I mean, Jai Courtney. I mean Boyd Holbrook.
I thought he was Charlie Hunnam for a while.
Oh, really?
I mean, like, in the promo stuff, not during the movie.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's fine here. It's weird, because he was in Logan. He was the bad guy in Logan.
Yeah,
he was great in Logan. He was so good. But, yeah, I feel like here, it's just kind of like, maybe he's overshadowed by everyone else being good, and, like, it's, I don't know, it's weird.
Yeah, I think it might also just be in Logan, he has, like, an eccentricity that, like, you know, as everyone does. Like, I mean, he's a mutant,
sure.
Literally. But, like, you know, he's got this weird stuff, and he's able to chew into that, like, kind of campy villain comic book stuff.
Yeah.
In this, he just has to be, like, everyman soldier.
And right, like, but he's still, like, cracking jokes, and he's doing the Shane Black quips.
Yeah.
And so I think there is, like, personality there. It's just, you know, I feel like he's overshadowed by... all the other characters. Really, Trevante Rhodes probably should have been the lead of this movie. Because he was, if you don't know Trevante Rhodes, he was in Moonlight, and he was great in that movie. But he really dives into, like, the cigar-chomping kind of 80s action hero role in this movie, and he gets some really cool, like, action scenes and lines and stuff. So it did feel like, you know, he was, like, if the movie had ended with, like, Boyd Holbrook dying and Trevante Rhodes kind of stepping in as the lead character, I think that would have been a lot cooler.
And
it would have been a pretty Shane Black move, I feel like, too. That feels like a subversion of expectations.
This is still, like, the obsession with chain smoking. So great.
But, yeah.
I want a Loonies prequel.
Yeah, I mean, I would love a movie just about the Loonies. They were great. You know.
Just remake, just shot for shot, Suicide Squad.
Yeah. But this time, we'll get it right. Also, the Predator's plan, I think it's a lot more complex this time around than it has been in movies past. Because every other movie is just about the Predators hunting people for sport, and that's, like, it. And in this movie, it's, like, this whole thing where it's, like, we're creating Predator-human hybrids, so we need human DNA to come down here. And it's, like, I feel like it verges on over-explanation of what the Predators are doing. In the same way that, like, Metachlorians exist in the Star Wars universe. Like,
yeah. It definitely had that feeling.
But, like, it didn't ruin the movie for me. It just felt like... It's such a simple concept, Predator, you know? Predator is just a simple movie. Bunch of guys in the woods. This alien came down, and it's trying to kill them. And that's, like, it.
That's the whole thing.
That's the whole movie. And it's like, why can't we just get back to that, you know? Why can't we just keep doing that? That worked.
Why does it have to be a government conspiracy?
Exactly. But speaking of the original, speaking of the other movies, I think there are, like, a couple of, like, groan-inducing kind of fan service-y moments here that I wasn't a big fan of. There's one moment where, like, Trevante Rhodes says, get to the chopper.
God. I didn't even notice that.
Oh, really? It happens really fast. And that kind of thing. And there's, like, another part where Olivia Munn sees the Predator and is like, you are one beautiful motherfucker, or something like that. Like, reversing the line from the original.
Yeah.
Which I thought was lame also. There is one thing I did like, though, and this is more of a deep cut fan service-y thing. Jake Busey is here playing the son of Gary Busey from Predator 2.
Whoa.
So Jake Busey is the one of the scientists in the lab. And Jake Busey is obviously Gary Busey's son, so he's playing Gary Busey's son in this movie. So I think that was pretty cool.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a moment too where I sort of wondered if he was Shane Black referenced Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
What moment was that?
It's when they're sort of in the standoff outside the ship before the Predator shows up, and Sterling K. Brown's like, there's seven of us, six of you, and then Alfie, whatever his name is.
Theon from Game of Thrones?
Yeah, Theon from Game of Thrones. Kills one of the guys, so now it's 6-on-6, and he Boyd says, like, oh, who the fuck taught you math? He's like, that's what Val Kilmer yells at Robert Downey Jr. when he's trying to explain the percentages with the revolver. And I was like, wait, did you just reference yourself? Are you allowed to do that?
Yeah, why not? Actually, speaking of, this movie does not take place at Christmas.
Big departure for Shane Plus.
Exactly. Does take place at Halloween. That's so true. He's sticking with the Halloween motif. But even the nice guys had like a little coda for Christmas at the end. Like it was.
Yeah.
You know? But anyway, yeah. So I think, I don't know if you have any other thoughts about The Predator, Mike. Overall, I thought it was generally pretty fun. Not anywhere near as good as some of Shane Black's best stuff, but you know, I enjoyed it for what it was. Sounds like you were not the biggest fan of this movie.
Yeah. I agree that it has some fun stuff. You know, the action and violence and those sort of things are fun. You know, and the Shane Black quips, which we love near and dear to our hearts here.
Yeah.
But there was just enough outer movie, like things that were going on with outside the movie, coupled with a couple scenes that made me uncomfortable. Was just enough to make me come down negative on this.
Yeah.
You know, if you can get past that and it just doesn't affect you as much, like, more power to you. I always want people to enjoy movies. That's my personal take.
Fair enough. Do you think in a couple of years, once, like, you're more removed from this controversy, you might be able to watch The Predator again and enjoy it a little more?
Yeah, probably. I think as I see some more Shane Black stuff, you know, some newer stuff and... Really, I've just got, like, real nervous, mostly, for Shane Black and, like, where the position he holds in my heart. Right. I'm just like, God, please don't let me down. Please don't let it be another, like, live long enough to, you know, become the villain situation. So that was mostly my reaction.
Okay, fair enough. We'll always have the nice guys.
We'll always have the nice guys and Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Yeah, all right, Mike, where can we find you online this week?
You can find me at MD Film Blog on Twitter.
And you can find me at M. Smith Film Blog on Twitter and all our podcasts and stuff at filmbook.com. Plus, you can follow me on Instagram, Radio Mike Sandwich, and Letterboxd at Mike Smith Film. Thank you so much for listening to Filmbookcast. I'm Mike Smith. That's Mike DiCrescio. If you're listening to this review via our podcast on iTunes, subscribe, rate, take a moment to give us a review. Any and all feedback, compliments, topic discussions, and even hate mail can be sent directly to podcast@filmbook.com. Please list the podcast you're emailing about in the title of your email, because we produce just so many different ones, it's hard to keep track. We would love to hear from you. Now, we're going to be back in a couple of weeks, probably with a review of Venom. That's what I'm thinking. Or at least that's the big one coming out in a couple of weeks. And I know we're looking forward to it. Right, Mike?
Yeah, I can't wait for that post-credits Black Cat Silver Sable stinger. It's going to be so good.
Exactly, yeah. So, yeah, Venom coming out in a couple of weeks. I'm going to see if we can get Vin back on the podcast for that one. Because I know he was excited for Venom, and I think he's the only one. you can check out our next Complete Works, where we're finally going to be talking about that movie that Mike watched like 3 months ago.
I can't believe I'm going to have to watch that movie twice. You son of a bitch.
Nicolas Cage's role in 2011's Trespass. I mean, if you can still remember what happened in the movie, you don't have to watch it again. But like, or maybe just like have it on in the background so you can like remember stuff as it's happening or whatever.
Okay.
But anyway, yeah, so Trespass, Joel Schumacher coming up for the next Complete Works. And it's a very exciting time for the Complete Works, actually, because we are in the middle of the Cageissance. It is happening, Mike. I'm very excited about it.
You've been singing the good word of the Cageissance.
Yes, since the beginning of this podcast.
Yeah.
For like 3 or 4 years, I've been like, the comeback is coming, guys. You've got to get ready.
It's right around the bend. And here we might be.
I think we are. I think we very much are. I told you he was in Teen Titans Go to the Movies. He's also in the new Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
You're right, actually.
Playing Spider-Man Noir, which I'm so excited about. You have no idea.
Oh, my God.
So we got that coming up next week. Thank you guys so much for listening. It's good to be back. We are out.
Two or three men out there at the most. Am I the only one who's awake? I don't believe in goblins or ghosts. Fucking listen. Give me a break.
If it bleeds, we can kill it. An expendable asset.
Yeah, now take a stand.
I won't look, why don't you?
So instead of complaining,
I'm bullshit's not gonna
you should
work.
Give us a hand.
I got nothing better to do.
I saw it. God damn it. Those eyes, they disappeared. It cut down my friend, and it ran while I emptied that gun.
If
If it bleeds, I saw it. I saw it, goddammit.
Stop shaving, you don't have a beard.
That thing will come back, and when it does, I'm gonna have me some fun.
If it bleeds,
I'm gonna have me some fun.
If it bleeds,
we can kill it.
If it bleeds, we can kill it.
We can pull out the wind.
We can pull out the wind. Set the trap.